You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
All right, we are just hours away from UFC 264, just hours away from our second Conor McGregor headlined event of the year. And that's the first time we've been able to say that in 5 years, believe it or not. And we're just hours away from the likely end of a near 7-year competitive rivalry as we welcome you to the UFC 264 preview show here on MMAfighting.com. We're going old school this time around. I am Mike Heck, being joined by Team Arizona. We have Jose Youngs, who is in Las Vegas right now, and we also have Mr. Sean Alshadi joining us from Arizona. And Jose, we've talked about vibes and crowds and buzzes for well over a year, maybe a year and a half on these talkback preview shows. But this is Las Vegas, man. This is a Conor McGregor headline card, and this is not. They seem fired up from where I'm sitting, 2,600 miles away from Las Vegas. So how would you describe the vibe the night before?
Oh, man, I will, like, when we did the reaction video to the press conference, I was telling you that it wasn't the same as the UFC 263 press conference. Like, that was red hot. Like, those fans were red hot. And this press conference, UFC 264, just felt kind of manufactured, especially with all of the Conor McGregor kind of doing the greatest hits, as we called them. It just felt weird. This weigh-ins, the ceremonial weigh-ins, was nearly at capacity for the T-Mobile Arena. Like, there were at least 10,000, 12,000 people in that arena to watch the weigh-ins. Obviously, they didn't have the octagon and stuff. Like, it was like kind of cut in half. But from what we saw, I didn't see many empty seats there. And it was filled up at least 45 minutes before the fighters even hit the quote-unquote scales, obviously, because they weighed in early in the day. So I didn't feel the hype a ton until tonight. But seeing the fans lining up to get in, seeing like the mini concert when we left, like there was like this concert on in the plaza, and seeing the other fighters that were just there in attendance, like when Brandon Moreno walked in, it was just as loud as when he walked in to fight. 12,000 people were chanting for Brandon Moreno, and he was just sitting in a seat. Charles Oliveira was signing autographs. I saw him sign a fan's popcorn bucket. Like, that's how excited these fans are that just have fights back in Las Vegas. So, yeah, the hype around this is finally palpable after so many months away from fights without fans in Las Vegas.
And, of course, Sean, the two men on the marquee, Dustin Poirier, Conor McGregor, finally we get this trilogy fight. There's been so many narratives heading into tomorrow night. Will the mean Conor come back and try to rattle some cages? How will Dustin Poirier handle it? Can Conor defend the leg kicks? Like, every sort of cliche thing that you can throw out about this fight has been talked about. So in your eye, Sean, as we're like 12 hours away from this thing going down, maybe a little more as you record this trilogy fight, Poirier-McGregor 3, what in your eyes is the key storyline? Like, what sticks out to you?
It's been a really bizarre lead up in a lot of ways, right? Because it is such a dichotomy, and it's such a polar opposite from what we saw earlier this year. I mean, with the old Conor versus the new Conor storyline, I feel like that's almost played out at this point, and we haven't even reached fight week, because it is definitely a thing. It's definitely a point of this, right? Where when we saw this fight earlier in the year, they're hugging, he's friendly, he's smiley, there's no trash talk. It was all just talk about, you know, this is for charity and all of this is good vibes. And then this week has just been so nasty, and it's, as we said, Conor is sort of playing the hits, but I don't know that they're landing in the way that they used to, right? Like, it feels very much forced. It feels like he is reaching for something, trying to find something that he can't quite find. He's not really getting there. I've seen a lot of people compare sort of his approach to this fight similar to what it felt like Ronda Rousey was doing before the Holly Holm fight, where she was just trying to find something to sort of latch onto there, and it wasn't really working, and you could kind of tell. It's a weird vibe like that, because I mean, even throughout the press conference at the weigh-ins, we saw it, him so fired up, and meanwhile the dichotomy of just Dustin being so stone-faced and so composed and smiley as all of this is happening across from him is such a bizarre sort of visual to get with these guys. And it does feel as though Dustin has risen above all of this and is just kind of enjoying himself somehow in the midst of all this chaos, whereas Conor is trying to stew this chaos as much as possible. But to me, I mean, you go back to the original question, what's the biggest narrative in the storyline of this week? To me, it's one that's not even really being talked about much, which is really the historical ramifications of this whole thing, of all of this. Because I think if we would have gone back to 2014, none of us would have ever expected Dustin Poirier to be sort of this signature rival of Conor McGregor. I mean, he felt like he left Dustin Poirier so far in the rearview mirror, even as recently as a couple of years ago. And now this really has become somewhat of a referendum on Conor McGregor's career and how much he has left and really who he was. Sort of like we're sort of retroactively talking about a lot of this stuff, right? Where like if Conor loses to Dustin and he has then at that point lost three of his last four, still one win since the Obama era, as that gentleman in the pink suit pointed out on the press conference day, man, that's a tough hit to Conor McGregor's legacy. Because I've said this a lot over the years, but at some point you get better known if you're just losing all these fights. At some point, the casual public just knows of you as a loser. And Conor McGregor hasn't been doing a lot of winning at this in recent years, man. It's been a long time other than that one Donald Cerrone fight. If he loses to Dustin, it really does have such a huge impact on his career. It feels like moving forward, obviously he'll still be a huge superstar, but you can't. It's so much harder to throw him into these high stakes fights. You kind of have to relegate him to the Nate Diaz type of stuff. And also you just look at, again, historical ramifications of all of this, right? Like Conor McGregor right now as a lightweight is what? 1-0? Is that it? I mean, 1-1? 1-1, because of Khabib and Eddie. Like, at a certain point, if he is just going to keep losing these lightweight fights, it is what it is. I mean, I guess I should say 1-2. I messed that up right there. But at a certain point, if he keeps losing these lightweight fights, it really does reflect poorly on sort of the overall run that we've been on with him and maybe how he's looked at in the grander scheme of things once all of this is done. And meanwhile, Dustin, he really could become one of the greatest lightweights of all time, at least like a top five figure if he wins this fight and just continues forward. Because he is the run he has been on outside of that Khabib fight has just been spectacular. And if Dustin is able to put away Conor twice in a row and really cement this series that we never thought he would get this sort of chance, he is going to rise so far up those historical ranks. I think the historical stakes just generally for this fight are really being underlooked and they're really, really weighty and important, and they could have a huge effect on both men's careers.
You make a lot of great points, and you kind of going through this whole thing and talking about this rivalry and how we got there and how we got to tomorrow, like it made me think, like, what if Dustin Poirier and Tony Ferguson actually fought last year? Like, would we even be having this conversation right now? Because then it led to Conor throwing out the charity thing, and here we are two fights later getting ready to close this trilogy. It's unbelievable. And you know, Jose, we talked about the press conference. We talked about Conor's demeanor, playing the greatest hits like Sean just alluded to. But after the ceremonials, he cut that promo. You know, Poirier, he's going to pay with his life. And man, I got to tell you, some people thought it was cheesy. It fired me up, man. The hairs on my arm were standing. I was excited. Like, I nodded my head like, all right, here we go. Poirier, of course, reacts perfectly. He no-sells it to the nines. What was your biggest takeaway from the final 3 minutes or so from the ceremonial weigh-ins, like the final face-to-face, the final words before these guys will actually walk to the octagon on Saturday?
I'll tell you what, I couldn't hear anything Conor McGregor said. Couldn't hear anything Dustin Poirier said. It was that loud. It was that loud in that arena. So that's what I took away, is Conor McGregor didn't break eye contact with Dustin Poirier after they stared down, to the point where when Joe Rogan was interviewing him, his back was to the crowd because Dustin Poirier was standing kind of behind him, like over here, and Conor kept looking at him and talking to Joe, but his back was to us. I couldn't hear what he was saying. I couldn't see his mouth moving because of how loud it was. I could see Dustin just laughing and saying, yeah, all right, I'll see you tomorrow. So my biggest takeaway is the fans are very hyped. Whatever Conor McGregor said, as you alluded to, clearly got them more hyped. So I don't know if the ramifications for Conor's legacy is as on the line as people are saying, because I've said this a million times, Conor's biggest attribute outside of his actual fighting skills is he can convince anybody that Dustin Poirier kicked him in the legs a bunch, and he's like, oh, you're a coward. You kicked me in the legs. Khabib Nurmagomedov shoots on for a takedown, and all of a sudden he's a coward. And then his fans are booing Dustin Poirier and calling him a coward because he kicked him in the leg. So Dustin, like, Conor McGregor can make his fans believe anything, as we've seen a million times. So obviously you need to win this fight, but my biggest takeaway is, regardless of what people might not care about this fight because it's a money fight or it's not really on for the belt or anything. Fans in attendance care. And based on my social media, when like I was tweeting, I tweeted something about Conor McGregor, the planet Earth cares about this fight a lot more than I think people let on leading up to this. And I feel it more than ever today, Friday.
Yeah, there's a certain energy level that Conor brings to the table. So, Sean, I wanted to ask you this because you mentioned the stakes for Conor, like how catastrophic this could be if he loses this fight. What happens if Dustin Poirier loses this fight? Because this is a loaded lightweight division. You cannot take a step back whatsoever. And right now, of course, he is the MMA Fighting's number one ranked lightweight in our global rankings. So, I mean, there's a lot more at stake than just a title shot. There's a spot in that rankings too. So what happens if Dustin Poirier loses this fight? Like, how bad is it for him? Like, is it really bad?
Well, professionally, I don't know that it's terribly bad, right? Because, I mean, Dustin Poirier, well, he would drop to what, number two or number three in terms of the lightweight grand scheme of things. Like, he's still one of the best lightweights in the world. I feel like we've sort of established that over the years with the run that he's been on, taking out Justin Gaethje, Eddie Alvarez, Max Holloway, Dan Hooker, Conor once. Like, he's been here. He's put together the resume. But, I mean, personally, like, outside of the professional nature of it, like, that's going to probably hurt him a lot, right? Like, that's going to be heartbreak city if he loses for a second time to this guy who is sort of acting in this way and has been this figure in his life over the course of the years, man. Cause I mean, this has been inescapable for Dustin forever, right? Like I remember talking to him. I'm trying to think of the event. It was UFC 211. I think it was in Dallas. It was for the first Eddie fight. And that ended up in that no contest. Right. And so that's 2017. At that point, he's basically 3 or 4 years removed from the first Conor fight. He's won a bunch of fights. He's changed divisions. He's not that guy anymore. And I watched multiple interviews in a row at a media day while I was waiting in line to talk to Dustin. Literally the whole interviews during that day were, hey, do you remember when you lost to Conor McGregor 3 years ago? That must have sucked, right? I watched multiple dudes have basically 5 minutes of just those kind of questions to Dustin 3 years later. Like that loss followed him so much, and it was, again, inescapable. It was a ghost he could not shake. And then he finally shook it in January. And then if that comes crashing down just a few months later, and it once again just sort of becomes this thing in his life that is just a fact at that point. He's not getting it back. And you know, you lost 2 or 3, you lost the series. I would imagine personally for Dustin, that is going to hurt a lot.
With that, it is pick time, gentlemen. Jose Youngs, who ends the trilogy with their hand raised in victory tomorrow night?
I definitely think it's a lot closer. Like I've seen a lot of pundits and people on Twitter say that Dustin's just going to tear through him again. I do believe Conor when he says about 85% of his last camp was preparing for Manny Pacquiao, because he chose Dustin for that charity boxing match because he's specifically a southpaw to get ready for Manny Pacquiao. I do believe that. I mean, there's a reason Phil Sutcliffe, his boxing coach, isn't here in Las Vegas, because he's not focusing on his boxing. He's focusing on mixed martial arts. That being said, I do favor Dustin. I'll probably pick Dustin to win. I have no idea how he's going to win, but I do think this is much closer to 50-50 than people think, because I know the Conor that we're seeing, like I said, manufactured, playing the best hits, drumming up drama that's not there. Maybe that's more for Conor. Maybe that's not to like tear down Poirier. Maybe that's what he needs in his head. He needs to hate Dustin Poirier to destroy him. He needs to tell himself, I need to send this man on a stretcher. And I'm just assuming that. I have no connection to Conor's camp right now. I'm just basing it off of his best performances. That's what we've seen him do. Yes, the Cowboy fight, it is what it is. He was friendly with that. But Cowboy himself said he wasn't really mentally in that fight to begin with. So Conor, what, going back to his roots with his trash talking probably helps him mentally. I think this is a 50-50 fight, but I'm going to lead Dustin, because I read some stat that in trilogy fights, the winner of the second fight almost always wins the third fight. And I love stats. I'm a baseball man. Based on that, I'm going to pick Dustin Poirier. Third round TKO.
Sean, your thoughts. Who walks out of the T-Mobile Arena with a huge win?
Yeah, I agree with Jose on two different points here. One, the idea that I think this is going to be a lot closer, and it just generally is a lot closer than people are making it out to be, right? Because you have two camps. You have people who think Dustin, oh, this is easy. Dustin's going to win again. It was no problem the first time. It'll be no problem the second time, which isn't true because it was a very close and competitive fight up until the knockout in that rematch. And then you have people who just think Connor is just going to wash Dustin and you know, the Connor diehards. I do think it's somewhere in the middle, like Jose is saying. I mean, that second fight was so ultra competitive. And I do believe Connor when he essentially says that he trained boxing for most of that camp, and also that he kind of, you know, thought it'd be easier. He thought he was going to walk through Dustin. He already did it once. He was coming in ultra confident. I think that's a lot of why he was acting the way he was acting. He was looking past him to a certain degree, which he has already said. And I actually agree with him. I mean, that feels right. But that being said, Dustin, there's something about Dustin Poirier right now, man. He really does seem to exude the confidence of a man who knows something that the rest of us don't. And there is always a weird thing when someone has that sort of mindset coming into a fight, right? Where they just have so much belief in themselves and they just are paying no attention to the noise. I do believe that the Connor trash talk and the way he is acting for this fight is mostly for himself, because he's totally right. Like the way that he used to get himself so wound up into these fights, it really seemed to work for him. And ever since, man, the friendly Connor, I mean, we've only seen it a few times, but it didn't really work out. It does absolutely feel like Connor McGregor is doing a lot of this, one, to market the fight, make himself more money, but also to really get himself in some place that he maybe hasn't been able to find for a long time. When you're waking up on silk sheets, satin sheets type of thing. He is so obscenely wealthy at this point. He has a family, multiple children. He's not that guy who was there at UFC 178. He's not that hungry young up and comer who is still scrapping and clawing for everything he can get. That's not been his life for a long time. And I do feel like he is trying to put himself back into that place and that mindset with this conversation that he has started around this fight. That being said, ultimately making the pick, I agree with Jose. It does feel as though this is Dustin's fight to lose. He is the favorite for a reason. Anything can happen with Conor McGregor. We've seen that guy pull off the impossible. We've seen him pull off the magical time and time again. But I do agree. I think Dustin Poirier wins it. I think he wins by knockout, probably mid-round, similar to the first fight. Maybe drags him into the third round, fourth round, something like that. But I do call a knockout for Dustin Poirier.
This sport is so crazy, right? Just like the last 15 minutes, 10, 15 minutes, you could go down a psychological rabbit hole at this fight and look at so many different angles. And one thing that always sticks out to me with MMA when it comes to situations like this is momentum means so much in this sport. And it's not like a recency bias thing, because MMA is so recency bias based, but Dustin Poirier has a lot of momentum right now. Like, and there's a lot on the line for both of these men, but I feel like Poirier just has more ways to win this fight. Like, he's eaten Connor's big shots, he's dealt with it, and Connor is super elusive and he's so good at making adjustments. I just don't know if he and his team can construct the right type of game plan in 6 months to defeat, in my opinion, the absolute best 155 pound fighter in the world. So I've been wrong before, I may be wrong tomorrow night, but my gut is telling me I'm getting pre-Gastelum Izzy vibes right now, that this thing is going to be ridiculous. There's going to be a lot of heart, a lot of will displayed by both guys. And I think we're going to see a fifth round, and I think we're going to go to the judges in a classic 25 minutes. But I think Dustin Poirier digs deep. He gets a decision after a big fifth round, maybe even hurts Connor down the stretch. But I think this is going to be one of those fights we're talking about at the end of the year, where like, hey, remember the trilogy fight between Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier? Man, oh man, was that a great fight. And I think we're going to kind of have that same conversation moving forward through the rest of 2021. So that's the main event.
Sign me up for that. That sounds wonderful, right? Like, I want to see Conor get that cage time. I want to see this guy get dragged into that type of fight. Jose, I think both you and I were there for Diaz-Conor too, right? Like, that
we
is
sat such next a, to each other.
We sat we next sat to each next other to during each other. That yeah, madness, man. Like, that is what I want to see from this. If that is where we get out of this, I am so overwhelmingly happy no matter who wins it, because that, like, we just need more moments like that with this guy. We've been so deprived of Conor fights through the years, but we know he's capable of something like that. I would love to see that kind of outcome.
Well, to me, this is the way the trilogy has to end.
One last final thing I want to add is, a lot of people say, like, whose legacy will be affected the most with a win and a loss. I am 100% in the boat that it depends on how you win and how you lose. Like Sean says, and what you said, if that is Izzy Gastelum, both stocks rise, both their careers take off. One of them goes out there and loses in 5 seconds in Jorge Masvidal style fashion. That's rough. So ask me again after the fight happens.
I do want to touch on the co-main event, Sean, if we could, because we got Gilbert Burns versus Stephen Thompson. This is a very important fight at 170 pounds. And with a Conor Poirier fight, it flies under the radar no matter how good this fight is. But, I mean, just thinking about this, Gilbert Burns versus Stephen Thompson, with where these guys are at in their careers, how good is this fight leading into Poirier-McGregor 3?
Oh, it's excellent. It's excellent, and it's so needed, right? Because this welterweight division, we've talked about it a lot, Mike. Like, this welterweight division is still, at this point, a complete and total mess. We don't really actually know what's going on. We keep hearing that Colby Covington versus Usman is going to be the fight. But who knows? Negotiations with Colby never seem to be easy. The UFC and him, you know, you never know where their relationship is. If he's asking for too high of a price, then you have Leon Edwards out there who still deserves the fight. And man, we've said it a couple times, but if Wonder Boy wins this fight here on Saturday, he very well could be that guy who thrown into the mix too, right? Like, if he might be that dude who's just then the next man up if something happens to Colby. So this is a crazy important fight. I love the stylistic matchup of it. I honestly wouldn't mind if Stephen Thompson gets that title fight with Kamaru Usman if he's able to win, because it is such a different type of style matchup than we've seen against Usman so far. I think that'd be very compelling to see Usman try to figure out that puzzle. But ultimately, I mean, these are two of the best welterweights in the world. It's been hilarious to see Stephen Thompson being thrown into this chaotic fight week as he just remains the nicest human being on the planet, just out of floating above it. I love it. I love everything about this fight.
To me, Jose, and I don't know if we've talked about this before, I feel like all the pressure is on Stephen Thompson here. Very little pressure on Gilbert Burns heading into this fight, especially while Kamaru Usman is still the welterweight champion. Now, if he fights Colby and Colby wins the belt, that makes things a little bit different. But this could very well be the last chance for Stephen Thompson. He might be in like Ric Flair territory where you got to keep winning or those title aspirations just go away. Do you agree with that? And if so, like, how much will that pressure, or in Burns's case, potentially lack thereof pressure, factor into this co-main event?
Well, I tell you what, Gilbert Burns feels the pressure himself. Like, he said it himself. His words were, it's a lot easier to get your first title shot than it is your second title shot. So if you go back and watch that media day, it's a different Gilbert Burns than we've seen at welterweight. It is like shorter answers, not as jovial. I don't know if something's going on with the weight cut or whatever. Obviously, he was a lightweight moving up, so I don't think the weight cut was much of a factor. But from everything I've seen with Gilbert Burns, he's putting all the pressure on himself because he knows you lose two in a row, you're probably not going to get a title shot at all in the next 3 or 4 years, especially in this welterweight division. Now, Stephen Thompson probably has the pressure just based on age, because you lose to Gilbert Burns, who just lost for the title at the age of Stephen Thompson, closer to 40. You got to think that's the swan song. But what I think Stephen Thompson has is he's, as you said, he's one of the more popular fighters in the division. I think he's a fighter that fans can get behind. I don't know if he fights Kamaru Usman. It's such an unfortunate place for him to be in, because the champion has beef with, I think, like, what, 3 or 4 fighters above him? And if we're talking about, like, because let's not forget, these individuals are prize fighters. So if Kamaru Usman wants to take the fight that makes him the most money, all power to him, especially because people should get paid as much as possible for getting punched in the face. Unfortunately, Stephen Thompson is probably not the one that's going to bring that money. But I'm with Sean. A high-level performance for Stephen Thompson, like a knockout or something, or just like a 30-25, sign me up for Stephen Thompson versus Kamaru Usman. But I disagree with you a little. I don't think it's as much pressure on Stephen Thompson as people are saying.
Okay. Sean, I'm going to let you make the pick first for this one. This is such a good fight, man. The more I think about it, the more I like it.
It's so good.
You go with Gilbert Burns to bounce back from his first title fight loss, or Stephen Thompson to take another step towards getting back to that title shot?
It's so good. It's so, I know I just didn't really say that, but I can't help myself. I love this fight. I can't wait for it. Stephen Thompson is the youngest 38-year-old man I have ever seen in my life. Like, that dude looks like he's 25. Like, it's frankly frustrating as a human being who lost his hair at like age 20 to see how young that dude looks. Like, I'm just obscenely jealous of that. But that is neither here nor there, as Jose does whatever he's doing to his little, what is that, a man bun? That's not a man bun, like ponytail? I don't know what we call that.
No, it's a top knot, my guy.
I mean, it's like a man bun. It's fine. Sure. But anyway, the pick for me is Stephen Thompson. I do think he gets it done, and I think he does feel sort of the moment that he's in right now, right? Because he is, we joke about it, but he is 38, and this is not coming back for him. This is really it, and he feels that idea that this is not coming back if I can't handle business on this one. I think he is absolutely as locked in and laser-focused as can be. Gilbert Burns still has a lot of time to be able to do what he wants to do in this game. I'm picking Stephen Thompson for this one, but I think it's going to be a very close fight, a very competitive fight, and I could see it going to a very, very close decision.
Jose, what do you think?
I'm picking Stephen Thompson too, probably 30-27, maybe 29-28. I think Gilbert Burns' comments after his loss to Kamaru Usman, where he clips Kamaru, his phrase was, "I went Cody Garbrandt crazy." You can't get frustrated against Stephen Thompson. Like, that's Stephen Thompson's game plan. He just keeps you at a distance, and then he takes you out of your game plan, and all of a sudden you spend 15 minutes fighting into his game plan. Like, how many times have we seen that? We've seen it against who? Like, Rory McDonald was trying Imanari rolls to get through. It didn't work out for him. Jorge Masvidal just kept running into like a side front kick. Vicente Luque now had a lot of success with his left hook that Stephen Thompson would like throw that sidekick and they come with a 1-2, and Vicente would find the home for the left hook. Gilbert Burns is a very good hook, left hook. I don't know if I'm sure Stephen Thompson is the one that can acknowledge that and work around that. So if he can avoid that and avoid the ground, obviously the fight is his. But I'm not going to count Gilbert Burns out whatsoever, but I think it's clearly Stephen Thompson's fight to win. I think he's a top five welterweight in the world.
Of course, Luque is part of the storyline too, since Burns and Luque have such a close relationship. So you know they've talked about, you know, some of the mistakes made.
Exactly.
It's such a really interesting matchup, and I like the fact that both guys brought in specialists to help them with their opponent's specialty. Like, Stephen Thompson's working with Ryan Hall to get ready to fight Gilbert Burns, and Gilbert Burns brings in freaking Raymond Daniels to get ready to fight Stephen Thompson. I love it. But I feel like, for some reason, as interesting as this fight is, I have a feeling Gilbert's going to fall in love with his striking a little bit too much here, which Gilbert's a very good striker, very powerful, very dangerous. Ask Kamaru Usman about that. But I think that's going to be his downfall in this fight. I think Thompson not only wins, I think he finishes him. I think Thompson surprises people. I think we're going to, I don't know if we're going to get Johnny Hendricks win 2.0, but I think we're going to see something like that, where Stephen Thompson's like, if you don't give me a title shot now, like, you guys are out of your minds. He probably won't get it, but at least he'll be next in line. So I think Wonderboy has a great performance. I think it's an interesting fight until he lands that shot, and it's going to be one of those, like, highlight reel finishes. And if things go down the way I say it's going to happen, this can be the greatest pay-per-view of all time. So last thing. And by the way, gentlemen, I'm taking Nico Price, Michel Pereira out of this discussion because this is too easy of a pick.
Come on. I'm taking it out of the discussion. Mike's killing me.
We know how good that fight's going to be. So, Jose, low-key banger, or I know you like to go the other route, under-the-radar fighter storyline heading into tomorrow night.
I'm super curious how Ilia Topuria is going to fare against Ryan Hall. Ilia Topuria we don't see a lot of people criticizing Ryan Hall a lot. He's kind of a cult hero amongst the fight fans. Ilia Topuria had nothing positive to say about Ryan Hall at the media day. I asked him, does anything about Ryan Hall's striking impress you? Because after all, he trains with Wonderboy. And he openly laughed at me. He laughed in my face. Like, come on, bro. Are you serious? I was like, I guess not. I just wanted to talk. Tell me something else besides Ryan Hall's a good grappler. He laughed at me. Said Ryan Hall is not as good as people say. Said his jiu-jitsu is great. It's good. I'm better. I'm not impressed. I have zero respect for this man. So my under the radar thing is, I think people are overlooking Ilia Topuria just because Ryan Hall is such a fan favorite. I'm sure our producer Casey Lydon behind the camera is shaking in anger right now. But I am very, very curious how Ilia Topuria performs against Ryan Hall, because he talked a big game in media day. He talked a big game on social media. Ryan Hall is clearly just like, all right, cool, man. Like, I'm glad you're confident. But I think for my low key person, I want to see how Ilia Topuria fares. I want to see if he can back up all the talk he's been doing.
You know what, Sean? I changed my mind with you, because you've written two tremendous features this week leading into this card. And if anyone can paint a word picture about a fight like Nico Price and Michel Pereira, it's you, my man. So if you want to use that fight, you go right ahead, because I can't wait to hear you put this fight into words.
Well, I was going to disregard your rules anyway and say that that's absolutely the pick. I mean, that's ridiculous. Like, this fight is everything that, like, if our good friend Jed Meshew was here, he would actually just spontaneously combust. This is the fight circus of UFC fights. Like, you can't put together a more absurd and ridiculous fight between two dudes who are just absolute maniacs, psychopaths in the best possible way. I have no idea what's going to happen in that fight. It might last 2 seconds. It might just be the craziest 15 minutes we've ever seen. I'm just getting stoked, just like talking about it. Nico Price was telling us this week that, you know, he quit smoking weed after he got suspended, and now he is more hyper. More hyper was his words. I don't even understand what a more hyper version of Nico Price is, but I want to see it. That sounds fantastic to me. Also, I mean, Jose mentioned it, the Ryan Hall fight. I am so here for any Ryan Hall fight ever. I totally agree with Casey when it comes to that subject. I mean, it's a shame and a crime that we haven't seen this dude more and that he can't get more fights. So I'm just excited to see the weirdness that guy's going to bring into the cage. But ultimately, I still stand for the NBK, natural born killer, Carlos Condit, Max Griffin. I talked to Carlos Condit earlier this week, and I had a little trip down memory lane with him. And I mean, this is a guy who has just been in this game at this point almost 20 years. He's going on year 20 almost. And he has his career, I wrote this in the piece, is sort of this almanac of MMA history, where he has just been at all of these stops that if you just sort of look down the timeline of MMA, it's all these notable things of, you know, Pancrase and Rumble on the Rock and Ring of Fire and WEC and just all of these spectacular promotions throughout the history of this sport. He is one of the all-time greats. I don't know if there's a welterweight still active right now who really has the resume and that covers the breadth and the just history of Carlos's. So it was really fun to sort of revisit a lot of those old fights with him and see what stuck out to him over the course of his legendary career. But I am always here for a Carlos Condit fight. I still love the fact that this guy's going. He told me that he is still as excited and he still enjoys this sport as much as he did 20 years ago. And he feels it. He feels that it's coming to an end. So he is treasuring every moment right now. That Max Griffin, Carlos Condit fight, for me, that's probably the one I'm most excited about here on this undercard, outside of the obvious craziness.
Yes. To me, it's Ryan Hall versus Ilia Topuria, because something crazy is going to happen in this fight. And someone's allure, if you will, is going to take a hit. Like, Topuria looks like a future title contender, no doubt about it. And Hall is such a, I mean, I'll use wizard and pun intended, but he's such a wild card because this guy is out here spin kicking Darren Elkins and dropping him in his last fight. Like, nobody saw that coming. So who knows what this guy's been up to between then and, you know, right now, heading into this fight for his first event since December of 2019. So outside of healing up some injuries, but I will say, this is the New England bias in me, I'm telling you right now, this Sean O'Malley, Chris Moutinho fight is going to be a banger. Moutinho, you saw the face off. Yeah. Moutinho just got right there. He is not going to be intimidated by Sean O'Malley one iota. I think Sean wins. I think he gets his highlight reel finish that most people expect him to get, but he's going to get cracked. He's going to have to earn it because Chris is going to be right in his face. I've seen Chris fight many times. He's just not going to back down. So it should be fun while it lasts, but Sean will eventually get that win. But I think that fight's going to be a lot more fun and have some really good moments. Could be the fight of the night for as long as it lasts. I'm throwing all sorts of darts out there.
Let's not get too crazy. Nico Price is going to be the fight of the night. Come on.
I'm glad. Maybe. I want to add one thing, because I obviously, Mike, you're still back there, but the Rhode Island jiu-jitsu scene where I'm from, I have a lot of friends from like elementary school and high school that are now in that scene. I think I probably got 15 to 20 text messages specifically about Chris Moutinho and how they train with him every day. And all of them said, this is probably going to win fight of the night. I said, probably not, but at least you're staying you're going with the New England crowd. So good for you, Mike.
I mean, listen, I just have to say,
taking shots.
Oh, no, go ahead. Go ahead, please. Go ahead, Mike.
No, I'm just saying, I'm taking shots. You probably have something way more compelling to say.
I definitely don't. All I have to say is that I love that on almost every single fight that we've talked about so far on this show, and just ultimately looking at on this card, at various points in these conversations, we've said, this is going to be crazy. This is good. There's so much can happen here. These fights are going to be crazy. Every single one of them, we're saying that. The matchmaking on this card is really spectacular, and it does feel like it has a chance to be one of, if not the best cards of the year, just with the way that the styles go in on a lot of these fights, man. I mean, you look at that featured prelim of little, those four fight set on the featured prelims, like all of those are absolute bangers for the most part. Like, I am so damn excited for this whole Saturday night to come, man. It can't come soon enough.
Omari Akhmedov and Brad Tavares on the early prelims, that fight rules, and I want the winner of that to fight the loser of Trevin Giles, Dricus du Plessis. Dricus du Plessis, I think, is a very bright prospect in middleweight, so don't forget about those fights either.
Yeah, Jennifer Maia and Jessica Ai, two former title contenders,
both made weight.
Challengers are fighting. Yeah, both made weight. They're fighting on the prelims too. This is crazy. 13 fight card, ladies and gentlemen. Prelims start 6 p.m. Eastern time, then the ESPN prelims, 8 Eastern, all bangers, followed by the main card at 10 p.m. Eastern. Use the code in the link that you're watching on right now to order UFC 264 on ESPN Plus pay-per-view tomorrow night. And of course, we will have you covered across the board. Videos, interviews, results, highlights, all that stuff. So stick with us over at MMAfighting.com. That's it. Get some sleep, everybody. For Jose Youngs and Sean Alshadi, I am Mike Heck. Thank you for checking out the UFC 264 preview show here on MMAfighting.com. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Suns in five.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.